order members, mitras, and friends. Kula Mitra has referred to my last public talk in London, which was, of course, the glory of the literary world. In fact, it wasn't so much a talk, I read a paper. Nowadays, I tend to favour reading papers. To be quite frank, I've rather gone off giving talks and giving lectures. In the course of so many years, I must have given several thousand talks and lectures, sermons, discourses, addresses, and so on. And perhaps you'll understand if I have just a little bit gone off giving talks and lectures. So yes, nowadays I do prefer to prepare papers and read them. And this is, of course, what I did last time I appeared in London on a public platform, when I read my paper on the glory of the literary world. I thought it rather a good paper, actually. And I think quite a few people agreed. Yes, it was quite a good paper. I got a bit of feedback to that effect, as I usually do. You know, just the odd friend at Padmaloka, in the Padmaloka community, you know, speaking a few appreciative words. I also got a bit of appreciative feedback from letters, but I also got, indirectly, a bit of criticism. Well, perhaps I shouldn't say criticism. Maybe it was more like, well, perhaps I shouldn't even say complaint. But I gathered that not everybody was quite happy about my paper and my reading. You know, this paper, they felt that a paper of that sort was, you know, rather too much to expect the average person, even the average FWBO person, even perhaps the average board member, to take in the course of an hour. They felt as though they'd been asked to take in just a little bit too much. The diet was perhaps, this is possibly a nice way of putting it, a little rich, a little concentrated, just a little indigestible. I must admit that at the time of reading this paper, I did notice a few people, even order members, stifling their yawns. So I decided that on this occasion, I wouldn't read a paper. I wouldn't prepare a paper and then just read it to you. I decided I'd just give one of my old-fashioned talks. That is to say, just preparing, you know, a few notes and giving the talk more or less off the cuff. I have to admit that I found it quite difficult to prepare just these few notes because my hand, as it were, didn't seem to want just to jot down a few notes. It wanted to write a paper. So after I found, instead of having just two pages of notes, I had four and five and six. I found, oh no, dear, I'm writing a paper and I just mustn't do this. Because after all, people are coming along to celebrate the FWBO anniversary. They want to enjoy themselves. They want to have fun. You know, they don't want to have to listen very quietly, very carefully, very attentively to a paper that needs a lot of concentrated thought. So I just tore up, you know, those pages of notes which were becoming a paper, and I started again, and I started again. In this way, I started five or six times. But it ended up with just two or three pages, so to speak, of very rough notes, and I might even, you know, not stick to those very closely. In fact, I'm already, you know, introducing my talk in a completely different way from what I intended. Yes, thinking about it, it did seem, as I've said, more appropriate that on an occasion like this, I should give a talk. I should perhaps let myself go a little bit and not stick too closely to my script or to my text. A talk seems more appropriate to the occasion. What is this occasion? The occasion is the anniversary of the FWBO. But what anniversary? The 19th anniversary. You know, as I sat at my desk, you know, in my study at Papaloka, looking out across the lawn, I tried to allow this fact to sink in, as it were. You know, that the FWBO is 19 years old. It's very difficult, you know, to imagine. It's very difficult to believe. Because sometimes I don't feel 19 years old myself. I don't feel as old as that. Sometimes. Sometimes I feel a lot older than that, but, you know. Sometimes I don't feel 19 years old myself, and here's, you know, the FWBO, 19 years old today, or practically today. 19 years of the Friends of the Western Buddhist Order. So, as I sat there at my desk, trying not to write a paper, I couldn't, you know, help, you know, thinking back to those very early days, letting my mind, you know, go back 19 years. And after all, as I think you all know, nostalgia is in the fashion. Huh? So why not, you know, be a little nostalgic? Why not let my mind, you know, go back on this occasion to those very early days of the FWBO, 19 years ago. Huh? And as my mind goes back, I mean, what do I see? Well, frankly, I don't see very much. Mainly, I see just me. In fact, right at the beginning, you know, even before the time of Sakura, our first tiny center, it was just me. And I can remember, one might say, the very moment when one might say that the FWBO was not born, but conceived. And it was conceived not in England, it was conceived in India. It was conceived in Calcutta. And in order to explain how the FWBO came to be conceived in Calcutta, of all places, I have to go a little back further. I have to indulge in a little more nostalgia, in a sense. Most of you know that I spent 20 years in India. I've written about the early years in India in my volume of memoirs, A Thousand Petaled Lotus. So 20 years in India, again, quite a large slice of anybody's life. Actually, I had no intention of returning to the West. I was going to spend all my days in India. But then a call came, so to speak, and I felt, yes, I had to respond to that call. And after 20 years, I came back to the West, to England, at the invitation of the English Sangha Trust and Sangha Association. And for 2 years, I worked mainly in London, but also around the country in the various little Buddhist centers and groups that existed in those days. And I functioned partly under the auspices of the Sangha Association, partly under the auspices of the Buddhist Society, and partly, as it were, independently, giving talks, teaching meditation, leading study, and retreats, and that sort of thing. So at the end of this 2 year period, I felt that I ought to stay longer, that there was quite a field ready and waiting in England, in Britain, for the seed of the Dharma. So I decided that I'd go back to India, visit my Indian friends, explain to them what I was going to do, that I was going to transfer myself from India to the West, to England, that I was going to work there. My work in India, my Buddhist work, had at that time reached a sort of impasse. I couldn't get any further, and I had been feeling a little frustrated for some time for various reasons that I won't go into now. So I decided that I would transfer my activities to the West, to England, and I'd carry on there. But first I had to go back to India for a few months, visit my teachers, especially Dardo Rinpoche, who I'm happy to say is still alive and well, explained to them what I wanted to do, obtain their blessing, and also visit my friends among the ex-untouchables, especially those in Pune and Nagpur, and explain to them what I was going to do. So this I did. I left England. I explained to also people there what I was going to do. So all my friends at the Sangha Association, my friends of the Buddhist Society, bade me farewell, urged me to come back as quickly as possible. I promised I would, and off I went to India, visited Delhi, visited Pune, visited Nagpur, and then I reached Calcutta. And in Calcutta, I received a letter. This letter was from the trustees of the English Sangha Trust. And the gist of it was, we don't want you back. Now, I'd told people that I was coming back. I had promised to come back. But the people who wrote this letter had thought of that. They suggested that I announced that I'd changed my mind. But of course, I hadn't changed my mind. And despite the letter, I came back. But when I received that letter, I understood at once the significance. And I said to the friend who was accompanying me, after I read this letter, do you know what this letter means? He said, no. I said, this letter means there's going to be a new Buddhist movement in Britain. So I went back. I found that the authorities of the Sangha Trust, the trustees, didn't want me back. The Buddhist Society didn't want me back. The doors of the existing Buddhist groups and societies were closed to me for several years. So, with faithful friends and followers who've been attending my talks and classes at the Hampstead Buddhist Vihara, friends who belonged, many of them, to the Sangha Association, we started up the Friends of the Western Buddhist Order 19 years ago. One day, I hope to write a volume of memoirs giving the full story of how the FWBO was set up, the circumstances leading to the setting up of the FWBO. I've given you this afternoon or this evening, the merest sketch. But this is the background. This is what led to the founding of the FWBO 19 years ago.